You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, for months, Governor Kristi Noem was on the short list as a vice presidential hopeful for Donald Trump before her star faded and Ohio Senator J.D. Vance got the nod. Now another Midwestern governor takes the spotlight. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz joins the Democratic ticket with Vice President Kamala Harris. Our Dakota political junkies are here with analysis on that and some other topics. John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. John Hunter, welcome back to the SDPB Kirby Family Studio. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
And joining us from the Black Hills, Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. He is co-host of the weekly political podcast, Dakota Town Hall, and he's president of the Home Slice Group there in the Black Hills. Murdoch is seated in our Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's the studio is so cool, by the way. I love it. This is maybe the nicest studio in the Black Hills. I should be saying that. We have studios.
It's a lovely place. Thank you to the donors of South Dakota Public Broadcasting for these beautiful studios in which we sit right now. All right, let's start with Governor Tim Walz. I'm not sure if you were all listening there to Christopher Vondracek, which, you know, brings up, John, you know, the idea of what might have been if the nod had gone to Governor Kristi Noem and all of the reporting would have been scooped up by the national news. And there's something sort of thrilling and unsettling about that at the same time. Any precedent for this kind of attention so close to the border here on the east side of the state?
No, I don't see a precedent for that, but you know, Midwest, we've talked about this in the past, especially that book came out not long ago about what is Midwest, who identifies as Midwest. And so it's apparently has a good reputation nationwide. And so I think if Governor Noem and Governor Walz had both been on the ticket, they would have tried to out-Midwest each other. Who's more Midwest? And they'd wear farm clothes and they'd wear ranch clothes and they would do everything they could to prove they are Midwesterners.
I had to go back and check the numbers. Murdoch, I don't know if you've been part of these conversations. West River, as much as we are East River, J.D. Vance from Ohio, of course, is Ohio in the Midwest. And the survey of Midwestern identity by Middle West Review and John Lux Group says a lot of people in Ohio consider themselves Midwesterners. West River, South Dakota, do you consider Ohio Midwestern? Is this a battle of the Midwestern VPs?
Sitting in the Black Hills, I mean, this is unique to us, but it's funny you bring it up that way. We're constantly in these fun bar napkin debates of where, if we're in the Midwest. I think we're the Mountain West out here. So Ohio can, I guess, have the Midwest.
You're in with Colorado, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we're mini Colorado Springs, if you think about Rapid City.
There's a lot of Colorado people who say they're in the Midwest, too. You got to check out the Middle West Review. It is the largest ever study on Midwestern history. And we talk about it maybe to death, Murdoch. So you'll enjoy catching up with that data.
Very good.
However, to this point, Governor Kristi Noem, Brad, has turned around and said, he's terribly radical, which is what we would expect to hear. Anything else out of the responses from John Thune's office, from the governor's office here in South Dakota, that indicate what this battle is going to be like? Because I don't think, even though Kristi Noem is not going to be the candidate, that she's not going to be a proxy right here on the western border of Minnesota, shouting South Dakota loud and proud. That was for you, Murdoch.
I thought that was to John. It's my first time. I'm trying to listen and do a good job.
Can't you see us pointing at you?
Well, I think Walz was the perfect candidate to try to out Midwest, I guess is the phrase. I also saw he's not afraid to start taking hard shots right away, which I think that's something the Democrats, I think, have sorely needed.
Yeah. Speaking of that, let's talk about your time in Sturgis. Have they printed the new t-shirts yet?
It's been kind of the joke. The Sturgis motorcycle rally, we were honestly a little scared it was going to be the first national event where the t-shirt printers were going to maybe not have an editor or two. But so far, so good. It's the normal, you know, the Sturgis rally audience is certainly a Trump audience. The t-shirts are what you expect.
All right. Well, if you haven't been there, I mean, the last time I was at Sturgis, Hillary Clinton was on the T-shirts in a lot on the back of a lot of motorcycles. They were very misogynistic T-shirts, and then there were also a lot of freedom and images of Donald Trump looking like Rambo or a warrior. So tell us, in an FCC friendly way, are they putting Kamala on the back of a bike in the same way? Because I'm very curious to see if that was a Hillary unique thing or if that was a gender unique thing. How is she showing up?
I mean, certainly a little of both. It's a little early, so it's not Harris everywhere.
Well, we didn't know about it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a surprise.
If this would have been maybe a couple weeks down the road, I'm not trying to make the Sturgis rally attendees look bad, but some of the shirts they wear do make them look bad.
Well, and it's not always what's selling, but it's maybe what's for sale. Some of those end up in a box and going home, and they're novelty items, to be fair.
And you could see that in 2016, the Confederate flag T-shirts kind of got popular, and then maybe they took them home and got yelled at by their family, and they stayed in a box. So you don't see those as much, which is nice.
I was trying to figure out the difference between a T-shirt that people are going to buy and the T-shirt that gets you in the store.
Sure, the one they hang on the wall,
right?
To get you to walk in. The Sturgis rally has always been a very politically free group. This is my 24th Sturgis rally this year. It used to be more of a keep Austin weird. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was really odd. Everyone welcome. You do you. Mind your business. Weird. And now it has a weird militant tinge to it, which, that'll burn out like everything else.
Yeah. Which brings me to the race this week, right? And that's going to be on Fox.
It's Fox Television. So the rally, the second weekend of the rally needed a boost. And now there's this thing where, the Sturgis rally going back to the 1930s has a wonderful history of motorcycle riding and races. And now that this event is going to be on the second Sunday, similar to how NASCAR does Chicago or mm-hmm. F1 does Las Vegas, they go right through downtown. And so they'll be like the New York Yankees of the motorcycle racing world speeding through downtown Sturgis on the second Sunday. It's so exciting.
Yeah. So, John Hunter, if you're advising Governor Kristi Noem and this national audience is going to be watching this race, is this an opportunity for her to be in the spotlight? And if so, what should she take that opportunity to do?
I wonder if there is an opportunity there. I think people who would tune in to watch those races would be interested in the races themselves, that they would not be interested in a political debate there. Now, that being said, there is an audience, and in a close election, every audience counts, every vote counts. And so anytime I think you can get your message to more people, they would try to do that. Now, I don't know if the organizers of the races or anyone else would carve out time to take a look at a governor as part of that or not. But
sure.
I think in both campaigns probably want to reach every possible audience they can.
Murdoch, has she been out to the rally this year? I haven't seen that yet.
Governor Noem was out yesterday. There was a big military appreciation day. There's a lot of veterans and service members. And so she came out to do sand on the rally point and give some proclamations, which was great. I've always kind of been hard on our administrations for not, trying to get the most out of the Sturgis motorcycle. It's the largest event we have in the state. It generates hundreds of millions of dollars in economic benefit all through the state mm-hmm. on the interstate corridors. And so I like that even though sometimes they're not my favorite governors, I still like that they come out and try to support the rally.
Yeah. John, speaking of military, the vice president's two military veterans, Tim Walz, National Guard, J.D. Vance, U.S. Marine, former. Walz has a longer career, of course, but that's interesting too. It's been a minute since we had that.
Well, I think what's really interesting is if you look back we had enough wars in time that it used to be all candidates had military veterans, especially post-World War II. Presidential candidates, vice president. I mean, if you look, Nixon, Carter, Ford,
your
all
commander
of
commander in chief.
All
yeah,
of them,
that's
right.
Supposed
and
to
so
be, yeah.
It really wasn't, I think, till Clinton until you had a new president without military experience. So I often thought it was, and I remember telling my dad this, I said, I think that if you are going to be Commander-in-Chief, I think it's valuable to have been in the military itself. Mm-hmm. And obviously presidents have other responsibilities, but certainly foreign policy and military leadership are key elements. So, I do find it interesting, but the pool doesn't have as many military veterans as it used to.
Yeah. I want to pivot a little bit. We can go back to this in a minute if you gentlemen want to, but I do want to make sure that we take it home to a column that John wrote in the Madison Daily Leader recently that is talking about the latest state financial scandal. And this is the indictment of Lana Carroll, who is a former DSS employee, former state employee, for embezzling, allegedly, a whole lot of money, $1.8 million. John, this is not the first time we have sat and talked about financial scandal and oversight. How does this fit into, maybe we should spin people up who are new to it, but in the last 10 years, we have seen a number of taxpayer dollars not end up where they were intended to go, and not always with justice or punishment, for some interesting reasons that we'll unpack here. So set us up, please.
Well, those are a lot of great, you triggered a lot of thoughts already.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah. It is. Now let's get right out of the way. These are, it's alleged crimes, right? Innocent mm-hmm. until proven guilty. But you're right, this would be the third kind of major state scandal, millions of dollars involved. You remember the things we talked about before, the EB-5 visa scandal, and then the Mid-Central Education Co-op, which was associated with the Gear Up program. They were a little bit different. They were not employees of, they are not state employees of South Dakota. Those were programs set up. They had used federal dollars, or in the case of the EB-5 thing, it was actually investor dollars, foreign investors coming to South Dakota and bringing money with them, and then people siphoning those off. So they are very different in those three situations. The one with Lana Carroll really disturbs me, because that is, it appeared to be over such a great length of time and not having been caught for that long, if true. But to take $1.78 million over 13 years, presumably 13 audits and multiple supervisors and other people who would be interested in this, really worries me, because that would indicate, if you've got, I don't know, 12 or 13,000 state employees, are there other opportunities for this if that can go on that many times? Mm. You asked me to fill in this thing. So Lana Carroll worked for the Department of Social Services in the Child Protection Services area, and that money is intended to help families in reporting child abuse and neglect, connecting parents to resources, involved helping, a little bit with foster
kids, yeah.
Foster and other, working with parenting skills and all that. So by anyone's stretch, those are great causes. And we talked a little bit. I talked to Josh Chilson, who, by the way, at SDPB, who's done some great reporting on that. We talked earlier, is this a theft of South Dakotans? You and I didn't pay any more taxes because of what this allegedly happened. But the state appropriates that money each year to this program. And I would presume there are always more requests than money available. And so who was it stolen from? People who made requests and didn't get the money for whatever. Right. And I'm presuming they're good purposes. So that's even a bigger tragedy with this. But I have deep concerns that is this an isolated case? Only one person stole from state government out of 12,000 employees over the last 13 years? I doubt it's an isolated case.
Yeah. Murdoch, three governors, multiple department heads or secretary heads. So it's really hard to pin this on any one leader, but also Attorney General Marty Jackley has definitely been the person who more than once has been charged with cleaning these problems up. What else stands out to you in this particular case, Murdoch?
The thing that stands out to me in this case is, as John was saying, where the money's being taken from is the biggest step. I don't know why this isn't a larger conversation in every statewide election. It's almost insane that it's not, and it certainly should be in 2026, as 17 people are going to be running for governor.
But Murdoch, you're exactly right. That is, it should be part of that debate, and who's going to be able to address that best?
And I don't think anybody can, like, you know, Marty specifically, I don't think has an angle to say he has been cleaning it up because these things keep happening. I don't mean to be hard on our
attorney
general.
He doesn't make the policy. He's been
right. He's the police officer. Yeah. He's not the policy.
Yeah. And I would have said that. I would have said Marty Jackley is the one who you're gonna, because he's gonna be able to come out and said I've fixed other people's problems. But anybody who's been affiliated with the Rounds administration or the Noem administration is gonna struggle because somebody else could make a case out of that.
And maybe. It's a shame sometimes the opposition for this argument comes out of, you know, the most kind of conspiracy-minded on Facebook. And, right. And it'd be nice if the Chamber of Commerce Republicans punched into this debate a little.
All right. We're going to leave it there for now. Murdoch, thank you so much for joining us. John Hunter, thanks as well. We'll have more on this conversation in the weeks ahead.
Thanks, Lori.